a verbatim transcript. And the full committee is present, and again, we are taking up SB 343, the retirement bill. The bill sponsor is with us, Senator Duncan.
Senator, for sure, you can get it here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will run through the Senate Bill 343 briefly. Yeah. I'm not going to go into any detail on the retirement stamp program. I think we'll see that enough for the past 2 or 3 years. But just to refresh your memory, of course, we did implement it last year. It implemented in June of 89 and continues through November 1st of this year. Employees who choose to participate in retirement incentive are required to show a personal services savings. That's a requirement of the legislation. Chapter 89 of 1980, Session Laws of 1989 also states that the organizational units of the plan must be selected so that the implementation of the plan results in maximum savings to the employer and personal services costs within 3 years after the commencement of the plan. It's the three-year calculation that has caused many long-term state employees not to be eligible. OMB is strictly interpreting each individual position as an organizational unit. That's not the way it was done in the previous program, it's the way OMB is doing it this time, and that is causing some difficulty because of the three-year requirement. Thus, if a savings is not shown on an individual's position, that person is not considered eligible for the program. The school districts which are participating and the university which also can participate have not taken the same approach to organizational units, and they have not experienced similar problems such as the state has. The preliminary information, which I think you also have in your packet, indicates that currently there's about 8,652 employees who are eligible. In the state service, there's 2,987. 1837 of those have been designated to participate. We've also received some figures from OMB today, and I know Allison's here, so perhaps you can follow up on this, that show 1,475 employees designated, which is not the same figure that we have, which we got from retirement benefits. The difference, we believe, is that OMB figures do not include the highway system, while retirement benefits does. The OMB also indicates that for those 1,475 employees, if they all retire, the state will save $14.3 million over the next 3 years. And of course, that's the bottom line of the program. It's supposed to be a cost savings program. If you compare the current program with the 86-87 program, it indicates that in the prior program, 83% of eligible state employees were designated to participate versus a current program rate of 61.5%. I think this clearly shows that many more employees are not qualifying for the program under the three-year savings criteria. Because incentives for long-term employees are more costly to the employer than those for short-term employees, it is very likely that when we receive the detailed information which I have requested, it will show that long-term employees make up the bulk of those not designated for participation. In fact, I've been contacted by many employees who have had many years of service, 20 years of service or so, who may be at the age of 50, and they are not eligible to participate because it does not show cost savings. I've also been contacted, by the way, by some employees who were eligible in the for the program 2 years ago and are not eligible this year. And it's very difficult to explain to them how they have been eligible for retirement incentive program in the 86-87 program and not eligible at this time. Not all school districts, by the way, have chosen to participate in the program. This is reflected in their 87.5% designation rate. To briefly explain, it's very, I think, complicated, and perhaps Mr. Stallnaker and others can get into it, but to briefly explain the reason why many long-term employees have not been designated by OMB, the retirement benefit in PERS is calculated as 2% times the first 10 years of service times average monthly compensation. The second 10 years is multiplied times 2.25%, and the third times 2.5%. There's, I think, in your packet a copy of the PERS retirement booklet, which has the applicable pages in it. Thus, a person with 30 years of service earns a retirement benefit which is almost 70% of their ending salary. A person with 10 years would receive only 20% of their ending salary. Since the cost of participation in the incentive is based on an actuarial calculation of the cost of the retirement system of the three-year incentive, plus the current value of any increased lifetime benefit, it costs more for long-term employees to participate. If an individual is relatively young and has many years of service, the problem is compounded. And as I said earlier, I've received numerous calls from individuals who are relatively young, in their early 50s or late 40s, have many years of service, and they seem to be the one area of folks who are not qualifying. There is in your packet an exhibit A and B, which shows the difference of the five-year calculation makes on a typical employee savings calculation. If you look at that, you can see first the calculation, exhibit A shows the calculation over 3 years. This is the same employee, keep in mind. The current range is set to 20L, and we calculated over 3 year savings, it shows a cost of $12,100. And if you look at Exhibit B, I'm calculating over 5 years, to show a savings of $13,900. So that expanded period of calculation does qualify that individual. It doesn't, and let me just reiterate this, I had several questions asked by legislators as we start talking about this. We're not giving them 5 years of benefit. We're not increasing years of benefit. The 3 years stays the same as the original bill. It's just that the cost savings can be considered over 5 years instead of 3 years. And undoubtedly, the cost savings for positions run even longer than 5 years. But under the way we passed the law last year, they had to limit it to a 3 year period of time. Exhibit C, if we want to look at Exhibit C, which is probably the one exhibit which we think points out how perhaps ridiculous this can become. Exhibit C is an example of a 3 year calculation. So on an Anchorage employee who is ineligible to RIP because it's going to cost the state $4.11. And if you carry that out over 5 years, one, undoubtedly there would be a cost savings. And elsewhere in the bill, of course, we do provide that if an individual is still going to cost money, they do have the flexibility to take care of that themselves by paying either the additional amount or by taking an actuarial deduction. So in the case of Exhibit C, the employee who right now is prohibited from participating because it's going to cost the state $4.11, if we pass SB 343 and incorporate the amendment that would allow an individual to pay that cost, he could pay $4.11 to the state, or $5 and save 90 cents, and would therefore participate in the RIP program. The bill is very limited in scope. It basically makes changes which affect only state government, and it does not change the window periods of the program. So we're not extending the window periods in Senate Bill 343 as it's presently written. It will not change nor add an additional incentive over what is offered in the original bill. As I said, the original incentive is 3 years. That incentive will remain the same. The window periods remain for teachers, the application period, June 30th of 89 through December 31st of 89, and must retire on or before August 1st, 1990. The university has the same window. And for state workers, the application period is September 30th of 89 through March 31st of this year, 1990, and must retire on or before November 1st of 1990. As I said, it does three things. One, extends the cost savings from 3 to 5, allows employees to pay a portion of the employer's share, or take a reduction in benefit in order to reduce the employer's cost. I would just like to emphasize that it's very important that the legislation move as quickly as possible because of the window period for state employees. And as I said, state employees are the ones who are being affected by this. The window period being the application, just to repeat, September 30th through March 31st, and must retire by November 1st, 1990. So it's important that the bill move quickly so that they can meet that window period, which does close on March 31st of 1990. That is a summary of the bill. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Senator. Questions of the bill sponsor? Senator Duncan, I just have one comment. Something you mentioned in your testimony about the people who the current interpretation or the current system is hurting the worst or barring to be eligible is the younger people with long years of service. Doesn't that sound somewhat ironic that we're trying to enable the younger people in their late 40s, early 50s to retire?
Well, the intent of the program, of course, the intent of the program is to reduce cost, state costs. And those folks who have many years of service, even if they are 50 years old or 49 or 52 or 53, they have many years of service, they're probably at the upper end of the pay scale because of the way the system works. And the way you save money is you retire those folks and you bring somebody in at the lower end of the pay scale. And they may be retiring fairly young. 50 is not very old. It gets younger every year. But it seems ironic, though, that the program is intended to reduce costs by retiring long-term employees. It does seem ironic that it's the long-term employees who are not qualifying.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Stallnecker from the Division of our Department of Administration. Did...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bob Stallnecker, Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement Benefits, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator, you
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, I think during the summer months, and we were up in Anchorage and legislators were back in their home districts, but it seems to me there was a problem that occurred in trying to get, after the paperwork had gone through the process down here in Juneau, it took time to get the people's checks to them. And I know we answered some TV interviews, and there was quite an issue up in Anchorage for several weeks there. And I was wondering if they've streamlined that or that's going to be improved in this next bubble that's going to come up for 1990, because there's going to even be more people demanding or not demanding, but going through getting their checks and everything else, and with all these school districts that are opting in too, and maybe you could elaborate on that.
Through the chair, Senator Ewing. Yes, and I think that's a good representation of the bubble. It's what we found, which was anticipated, is that when the program first came into the first window period opened, you had a lot of people that were waiting to retire that just waited until that point and then retired. We had a lot of people that wanted to retire. It created a burden on the employers for verifying their service and salary. With the state of Alaska, there was certainly being the largest employer, they had the greatest impact. There were some other problems with some turnover that they were having, and that's where the big problem came, was with the first bubble. Since that time, we've all worked pretty well together and we streamlined the process. I don't anticipate that kind of a problem in the future. I think that the Division of Finance in verifying the service and salary has got the process down fairly well now. But you're right, once we approach the end of the various window periods, we are also going to see another bubble, and that's the people that want to wait until the last minute to retire.
Okay.
But I don't anticipate the employers having as difficult.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, the instance was a gentleman who was with the Anchorage School District. It was a school district situation, and he was a custodian, and it seems to me it took until either October or November before he called me at home, I think one night at about 8:30 in the evening. And in addition to that, had gone on TV a couple of weeks prior to that, but even after the news coverage on it, he still didn't have any remedy to it. I think it finally got taken care of in November, but it required us calling down here and that kind of thing. But it did seem particularly, it wasn't the state employees as much as it was the school districts throughout the state.
Through the chair, Senator Ewing. I think you will always find, and certainly we find, that there are those individual cases, some of them that are extremely difficult for whatever reason. They work for many different employers that have to have service verified through several different employers. They've got leave without pay or workers' comp built in to where their records are very mixed up over a long, and we're talking about people that may have 20, 30 years of service, so their record, the employer's record systems could have changed over those times. The bottom line is we do find cases occasionally where we have people that are very difficult to get retired through the verification process. When you couple that with one of these types of programs, of course, it's easy to get it all mixed up and think, well, is this a problem with the program, or is this a case where we've got an individual that's just unusually hard to figure out and to get it all set up? I don't know the specific case you're talking about, so I can't really speak to that, but I think it's fair to say that regardless of what steps we take, we're always going to have some people that are going to be a little more difficult than others. And certainly we work as hard as we can with the employers to get them retired as quickly as possible.
It was real interesting because, Mr. Chairman, it was a situation where I think they had the one person went on TV and he said, yes, I'm representing these other 80 people. So I think it was resolved, but I just was hoping that you will be prepared now this 1990 period here.
Senator Kelly.
Yeah, during hearings on the Cost Care Containment Task Force, we heard that some of the early retirements were affecting the amount being paid for health benefits for the early retirees. That money comes out of the retirement system. Do you have any, do you calculate that amount into these scenarios when you determine what saving the state money is?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly, yes, we certainly do. That's part of the employer cost. The actuarial cost of providing the entire benefit, whether it be additional health benefits because they're retiring before an age that they would normally receive, let's say, or whatever the circumstances would be, those costs are all calculated into the employer cost.
But you understand what I'm saying? The benefits paid for by a retired employee come out of the state trust fund, the pension trust fund. What do we call it, Jim? PERSIP. It doesn't come out of the general fund every year. But you still determine that when it comes to determining whether or not the state is saving money over a three-year period or a five-year period under this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Kelly. Yes, the PERS and the TERS funds, the judicial fund, are funds that are trust funds for not only state, but for all political subdivisions and employers that participate in the system. Yes, the costs of retirement come from those funds, but the cost is tied to the employer from which the employee retired. So that when an employee retires, regardless of the employer, we assess the cost to the employer for that employee's retirement. And under a RIF program where the employee is retiring earlier than possibly anticipated, and there are additional costs that come from that, including health care or the additional benefits the person gets for a longer period of retirement. We determine or we calculate all that in the cost, yes.
Other questions? Mr. Stallman?
I just had one specific question to this bill. In your reading of this bill or these amendments, do you anticipate any particular problems should the bill pass and implement any?
Mr. Chairman, I don't anticipate any problems. I anticipate a larger number of people retiring, and that's why in our fiscal note we're anticipating needing the temporary positions for a couple months longer to make sure that we can take the additional number of people retiring. But I don't anticipate any specific problems.
Senator Kelly.
How many people do you anticipate will retire?
If indications or statistics hold, in the last program, we had somewhere in the vicinity of about 35% to 40% of those people who were actually eligible retiring. We don't show currently, of course it's very early in both the programs, but we don't show that high of a percentage. So if we're looking at a total of about 8,600, then we'd probably be looking at about 2,000, perhaps, 2,200 retiring. Last time we had about 8,000. We have approximately 8,600 eligible this time. Last time we had approximately 8,000 eligible, and we had 2,300 who actually retired. So if we have any type of the same numbers, we'd be looking at about 2,600 throughout all systems.
Other questions? Senator Adams.
Follow up on that one. If you said 35% to 40% retire, do you think it? We should look at perhaps making this mandatory of the OMB statistics here of 1,475 state employees that might retire for savings of $14.3 million to the state. Do you think if this is a savings program that we should make it mandatory to get them off the rolls?
Through the chair, Senator Adams, I think understanding that this bill is to be used as a tool for the employer, I certainly wouldn't want to speak for the employers as far as making this a mandatory or an elective process. I do believe, however, mandatory retirement is not allowable under any circumstances, under ERISA or any other retirement plan. You cannot mandate retirement. They did away, I think they used to have a retirement age of 70, and they've done away with that nationally. I don't know how you'd go about making it mandatory. I don't think that would serve the interest of the program personally, but I couldn't speak for the employer.
Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Stallman, thank you very much. Allison Elgy from OMB.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Allison Elgy. I'm the budget review in the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Our division has acted as the employer in certifying eligibility for state government workers. And just briefly, I'd like to say we've worked closely with Senator Duncan's office and have no reservations about supporting the legislation that he is proposing. I think that his statements were very accurate in reflecting that the cost savings that are demonstrated over 3 years will frequently extend for many years beyond that. And the 3 years is more or less an arbitrary definition. 5 years is equal and meaningful. So. With that, I will just open up the questions.
One of the questions that I have on the 3 to 5 years is, and again, I'm not intimately familiar, certainly not like the bill sponsor or yourself in the personnel system, but it seems to me that you have agencies like DNR that have people who may be hired as, you know, where you have broad categories of people, say natural resource specialists. Now, maybe there's nobody left over there after the budget cuts, but there used to be a lot of people in that category, and they may be hired on as a range 17. And that it is administratively possible that after so much time, they are promoted in place. They don't fill positions. They are promoted to, you can be a range 18 or a range 19 or a range 20 natural resource specialist. It seems to me that the longer you get out in calculating your costs and benefits, say to 5 years, that it's very difficult, or it becomes more difficult in some of these broader job categories to anticipate whether or not a new person coming on would remain at a range 17 and then go to an A, B, C, skip a year, D, or whatever the thing is, versus arrange 17AB, promotion to a 19AB, and maybe even another promotion in year five. Is that a problem, or is that in the calculations?
To the extent that occurs, Senator, we are understating the cost savings because we are taking the position as it is currently classed, so that if it is a range 17, it is stepped out and there is no promotion going on during that time period that we are demonstrating cost savings. If the individual were to be promoted, say, in the third year and worked the last three, and you had a coupled job class or it's not the right word for it, it's a flexed position that, say, was a natural resources specialist 1-2, we would take them at whatever they were right now for determining the cost savings. When that individual retires or was otherwise separated from state service, ordinarily the department then goes back and refills at the lower flexibly.
So you're saying the new position, if this guy was a range 19 or a 2, you, for purposes of calculation, you would just go to the 2 step AB, even though in reality they might hire at the range 17.
Yes. Because it is discretionary on the part of the individual during the hiring, we had to make some assumptions in terms of our cost and savings demonstration.
Senator Kelly?
If you're hired on in a position of, say, a 20, do you always come in at an A range?
No, Senator, that would not necessarily always be the case. One example that frequently occurs where it would not be is where you had a progressive series and you had a person who was I've seen this in the education series, say an education specialist 3 or something, which I'm not sure I've got the job classes right, but that would be like the higher end of those series. Not a lot of those positions, and a number of people in the 2 category that had been there for years and had been stepped out. If they were eligible and chosen for promotion to the 3, they would be held at a comparable salary, so that if they were in an F step and in promoting up, keeping them at the same salary that you started them at a C, that would be the normal course.
That's my concern with the example we have. You know, they're saying the 20L gets out and is replaced by a 20A. It takes several years for the A to get to an L, but you're not always going to replace the 20L with 20L.
No, but Senator, Mr. Chairman, we felt that we had a balancing act to do an implementation of this program. One of the things that we did not take into account was the example that Senator Forshaw used earlier, where you could have an employee coming in that was actually being hired at a lower range than the individual that was being retired. So where we did not recognize the potential lessening of cost savings for the individual starting at higher than an A step, we were not also taking into account a greater cost savings if the person was actually starting at a lower pay range. There was a balancing act to try to implement the program.
If I might pursue another question, just to ask you straight out, are you or the administration still satisfied that there are cost savings in implementing the program, and more specifically, as it would be amended here?
Yes, sir. The cost savings figure that is quoted in Senator Duncan's letter is for the 1,475 employees we have on the file. Right now we are working to get that file updated. And of course it's potential because not all these employees will necessarily retire, but this is calculated over 3 years. Extending it to 5 would increase the cost savings for these employees as well as for other employees who are presently not qualified. For people that still would not qualify on a cost savings basis, the opportunity to assume a portion of that cost themselves means that it's a net cost to the state, net zero cost.
So are there any other changes that you would make to the existing program if you were trying to design a more effective, efficient program?
I had not thought about that, Senator. I'd have to give some thought to that before I'd be prepared to answer.
Let me ask you a final question. You know, you can put a dollar and cents on savings between, you know, on retiring people out, and one of the intangibles is the expertise or the job that some of these seasoned state employees are doing. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed or have any fears that there may be a so-called brain drain going on, or that we will be losing key people in positions throughout state government?
Senator, I'm not aware of a high degree of concern. I am sure that there are concerns amongst some of the state managers, but it has not been brought to my attention, with the one exception that I believe you'll be hearing from the Division of Elections.
Senator
Kelly. On the other side of the coin, are we checking the number of people that get on early retirement versus the number of people that are getting state contracts, say, in the following year? I've heard rumors that an awful lot of these people getting out are just going back on their contractual basis, and got a pretty good deal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kelly, that occurred under the prior program. I believe it's specifically precluded in the legislation that was passed last year.
Brain drain doesn't worry me. I mean, we have the legislature every 2 years. We sort of have.
Yeah, good point.
You're retiring.
Other questions, Ms. Elgin? Thank you very much. We have Mr. Coivanini from the Lieutenant Governor's Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is David Coivanini. I'm a special assistant to Lieutenant Governor McElfine. Basically, Mr. Chairman, what we're asking for is an extension of the date that the employees have to leave service from November 1, 1990 to February 1, 1991. As I'm sure all of you are well aware, the date of the general election is 5 days, I think it is, after the mandatory date, November 1. And we feel that with the extension of time, that will give us time to get through the election, get it certified, and if there's any recounts or challenges or anything like that, we'll have an opportunity to have our people who qualify for the retirement program to assist us in getting through the election.
So it's my understanding that the amendment you're proposing would not alter any of the qualifications or for eligibility. It would simply extend the mandated time that all people eligible and opting for retirement have to be out of the system.
That's
just
correct.
For division elections, that date would be extended for 3 months.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, right now there are 5 people within this division who qualify, and that won't change at all. It'll still be those 5. And right now we anticipate this amendment probably only affect 2 of those people.
Senator Kelly.
But that's not unreasonable on the face of it, because elections are logistical nightmares and you've got a good team working over there. But Jim, do you know of any other groups that want to come in like this? I hate to be that it's been chopped up. But
we have a delay. That's their proposal.
Excuse me. Senator
Adams. Does the sponsor object to the amount?
No,
not if
they would accept
it. Well,
Senator Kelly?
I think the Division of Elections is a special breed of cat, because we have elections every 2 years. The public generally doesn't give the recognition due to the Division of Elections. It's taken for granted when they run a nice election without any controversy. That's very difficult to do. I think the Division of Elections have done an excellent job the last few years. So I think that might be special, but I'm real concerned about opening this thing up to other employees. You know, I think one of the things we're learning is that it's not doing us any good in terms of cutting out total numbers of employees, which is what some of us were kind of hoping it would result in. So I have no objection to the amendment, but I reserve the right to object to other types of groups trying to get into the same thing.
Unfortunately, it's a very small number of people, and I don't want to get into a discussion of personalities or the abilities of these people, but are there other alternatives to the division for accomplishing work? Should these 2 people or whatever retire?
We've thought of that, Mr. Chairman, and basically, you know, under the law as it exists, we cannot put these people on contract. You know, who would be ripping out for, I think it's a 1-year period. Other people who have formerly worked in the division, we may be able to contract with some of them, but there just aren't that many people with the expertise that you know, the people who we're looking at in this program who could come in and replace them.
Senator Kelly?
Are you talking about the employees, the division elections that are employed right now?
That's correct.
Could we amend the amendment to indicate that we're talking about employees of the division elections as are employed as of this date?
It is so stated. I believe that is to be a first for employees of the Division of Elections, or
no, because somebody could be hired with the Division of Elections on January 29th, 1990, specifically for the purpose of coming in under this program.
Move it. Senator Duncan.
Chairman, I think
think that's correct. So I think the original bill indicates that individuals have to be employed since November 1 of 1988. So,
and they'd also have to make their election by the 31st of this March.
Okay, well, if it's covered, where's it covered in the bill? Have to be employed by the state or have to be employed by the division of elections?
But they'd have to make their election.
As long as we're talking about just employees with division elections that are employed right now, I have no concern with this. But without closing that window, I think you're going to see some maneuvering being done for people to get involved in the division of elections.
I might ask, maybe I could ask at this time, Allison, what is the position of the administration on this? Have you had a chance to view the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and we understand the concerns of the Division of Elections that would support the amendment with just those employees. We also share Senator Kelly's concern about opening this up to a whole bunch of people, but this is an exceptional circumstance.
Senator Fex.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any problems with supporting Senator Kelly's tightening the amendment and putting a specific category of employees on there, but judging from how OMB and the administration figured out who was eligible under the last BRIT program, I don't think this administration is planning to open it up, but I think his point is well taken.
I might not trust the next administration, depending on who it is.
So I would move that we amend subpara 1, say February 1, 1991, for employees of the Division of Elections that are employed on February 1, 1990. So if they're there now, they're eligible for the thing, but no more.
Discussion? If not, we'll adopt that amendment to the amendment. And
would you like the amendment moved
please,
as amended?
Please.
I would move the amendment from the Division of Elections or Lieutenant Governor's Office to be included in the new CS. And this, I would move this amendment as amended to be included in the new CS for this case.
Discussion? The inclusion amendment in what would be a new CS? We will adopt that. And if I might just, we'll check the technical language of Senator Kelly's amendment, the amendment prior to the redrafting of the CS. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Anything else? We also have with us Don Rouleau.
Thank you, Chairman, committee members. I'm Don Rouleau with the Republican Employees Local 71. We do support this retirement bill. Under the current law, Local 71 virtually is not a member that qualifies. There may be one or two out there. That's because of the makeup of our wage scales. As you know, a typical state employee has an A to E step, I believe it is, 6 years, where Local 71, they have just the two steps. They come in at A step and then go to B after 150 days, so that's virtually all their all the savings that they can show, other than a service bonus after 7 years, 30 cents an hour, and 9 years, another 30 cents. So this does give them some flexibility to that goal, but the majority of ours are 2,500 up to even 30,000 in the hole. The increase will give them from 3 to 5 will help them out, and especially those in the bubble, and the if they're allowed to pay part of the employer's cost also, maybe that'll shove a few over, but so we're in favor of this one.
Questions, Mr. Rouleau? Thank you very much. Buddy Maupin?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Buddy Maupin. I'm a regional representative for ASEA AFSCME Local 52, and I'd like to echo a lot of the comments that Senator Duncan made earlier about some of the confusion when this bill was enacted. With people who had thought they would be eligible and they weren't eligible. We received a number of inquiries similar to the ones the Senator referenced, and we believe that SB 343, as before this committee, will adequately address those concerns and extend ability to participate to a number of people who had heretofore thought that they were eligible to participate until the question of eligibility in the last time around. So I have nothing more to say than that, except we support this legislation and urge its adoption.
Questions, Mr. Maupin? Thank you very much, sir. I don't have anybody listed who had signed up. Is there anyone else in the audience who cares to testify on the bill before us at this time? What is the pleasure of the committee? Senator Adams?
Yes, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill number 343 as amended, be moved out of committee with individual recommendations.
And the company fiscal note.
And the company fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill from committee? If not, we will move the bill from committee and the committee stands adjourned.
Thank you.
I know that's what's in that one.